Before I begin, I just wish to ask in advance your forbearance and mechila. With the rishus of the organizers, I may need a couple of extra minutes, and they recommended just going over a few, but hopefully if it goes over, only by a few minutes. So again, I ask your mechila in advance. The Torah in last week's parsha describes the inhabitants of Sodom as follows. Ve'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chato'im la'ashem me'od. The people of Sodom were evil and sinners to God a lot. The Mishnah Mechelek comments in fairly extreme terms. Anshei Sodom ein lahem chelek la'olam haba. Shenemar v'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chato'im la'ashem me'od. Ra'im ba'olam hazeh v'chato'im la'olam haba. What exactly was the chait of Sodom? In contemporary culture, it's something that I mentioned when I spoke last December. Following a Christian reading, the term sodomy is used to refer to the act of Mishkav Zachor. This is both incorrect and unfortunate. First, it is incorrect because it is a bad reading of the story in Bereishis. The story is about the inhabitants of Sodom trying to abuse their guests. A look at the parallel story of Pilegesh Begiva makes clear that sodomite-like people are equally content to abuse women. But worse, it is unfortunate because it distracts from the real sin of Sodom's inhabitants, what the actual definition of sodomy should be when we use the term. The first, historically speaking, and for Chazal and us, definitionally authoritative interpretation offered of the story is that of the prophet Yechezkel. He states, Hinei zeh haya avon Sodom achoseich, Ga'on sivas lechem mishavas hashket hayalav v'livno seha v'yad ani ve'avion lo echazika. Behold, this was the sin of your sister Sodom, it and its sister cities, had the pride of the one sated with bread and living in tranquility. And the hand of the poor and the impoverished she did not support. Chazal, taking their cue from this, tell us in the Tosefta Sota, Anshei Sodom lo nisga'u l'fnei amakom elamitoch ha'tova sheshpia lahem. The only reason that the people of Sodom became arrogant was because of the good that God bestowed upon them. Anshei Sodom amru, Hoel u'mazon yotzei me'artzenu, v'chesef v'zav yotzei me'artzenu, v'avanim tovosum argolios yosos me'artzenu, ein anu tzrichim sheyavu b'nei adam aleinu. The people of Sodom said, since food grows from our land, and gold and silver are mined from our land, and precious stones and pearls emerge from our land, we don't need anybody else to come to us. Ein boim aleinu ela lachasreinu. They only come to take away from us. Na'amod unishakeach es haregel mibeinosenu. Let us make the wayfarer scarce. Let us eliminate the wayfarer from amongst us. Amar lahem hamakom. God said to them, B'tova sheshpati lachem atem mishachem es haregel mibeinechem. Ani ashakeach eschem min ha'olam. With the bounty I have bestowed upon you, you wish to eliminate the wayfarer from amongst you, I will eliminate you from the world. Chazal and the Mishnah Avos encapsulate this as, this attitude as, Shali Shali v'shalach shalach zemidas Sodom. It was the enormous material wealth with which the Ribbono Shalom endowed Sodom that led to its annihilation. Sodom might have been the first society recorded where the overabundance of the material ate away and rotted its core, but it is not and will not be the only such society. In the thought of Chazal, poverty is in itself not a virtue. Pasta melach tochal is a prescription for one who has very little material support and yet desires to be chona echelek in Torah. It is not an idealized desideratum. If one is fortunate enough to have greater resources, they are, kal v'chomer, obligated to study Torah. As the Gemara in Yoma observes, Rav Elazar ben Charsom mechayev es ha'ashirim. Rav Elazar ben Charsom, who was very wealthy and yet studied Torah, will serve as the indictment for those whose wealth stood in their way of studying Torah. But herein lies the danger. There are too many times when material wealth becomes, as Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles terms it, osher shamur liv'alav l'ra'aso. Wealth which is stored for its owners, for his evil. It becomes a curse that eats away at the inner core of an individual, a family, or a community. The first danger of material abundance is that it causes one to forget God. Moshe Rabbeinu warns us in Parshas Ekev, Pen tochal v'savata uvatim tivne v'yashavta. lest you build very nice houses and you're satisfied with your food. The next step is v'rab levavecha, v'shachachtos Hashem Elokecha ha-motziecha me'eretz Mitzrayim yibeis avadim. You become arrogant and you forget the Ribbono Shel Olam who took you out of Mitzrayim. And why do you forget? Because v'amarta b'levavecha kochi v'otzem yadi asal li'esachai alazeh. Everything is due to your efforts. You don't owe it to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Someone told me that he was sitting in shul, and a financially comfortable fellow came over to crow about the election of a particular political candidate. The person asked him, "Don't you care about the poor?" The man responded, "And whose fault is it that they are poor?" A response that would have made Ayn Rand and her followers proud. In other words, "Kochi v'otzem yadi asali esachai alazeh." The Gemara in Chelek speaks about how each of the later Judean kings who were religiously corrupt attempted to infuriate God. Achaz put an idol in the aliyah of the Heichal. Menashe brought it down to the Heichal. Amon put it in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But then the Gemara tells us, Ki asa Yehoyakim Omar. When Yehoyakim came along, Omar kamai lo yada larguze. He said, the earlier kings, they were pikers. They don't know how to infuriate God. I know how to infuriate God. And what did he do? It wasn't Avodah Zarah. He just said, Klum anu tzrichem ela la'oro. Do we need God's giving us light in this world? Yeshlanu zahav parvayim shanu mishtam shimbo. We have this magnificent gold which will provide us with the light. Yitol oro, let him take his light. Amrulo, his servant, said to him, Your Majesty, V'halo kesef v'zahav shalohu, shenemar li ha-kesef v'li ha-zahav norm Hashem tzvakos. But the money all belongs to God. Amar lehem, Yehoyakim responded, Kfar nesano lanu. He gave it to us, shenemar, ha-shamayim shamayim la-shem v'aretz nasan levnei adam. We might describe this as shali shali v'shalo shalo. Or in the words of one contemporary irreverent cultural critic when asked to say grace over a meal, Dear God, we pay for all of this stuff ourselves, so thanks for nothing. The second danger of materialism is its tendency to corrode and corrupt the values of everyone in the community. When we look at the Dor HaMabul, there was one family, at least, that was able to look at the corruption of society and reject it. Noach and his family. The same held true in the Dor HaPalaga. Rashi comments on the pasuk in Parshas Noach, Min ha'aretz ahi yatza Ashur, Kevan shira Ashur es banav shomen lenimrod umordim b'makom livnos hamigdal. When Ashur saw that his children were being drawn after Nimrod and were participating in the building of the tower, yatza mitocham, he left. Ashur and his children were able to see and escape the corruption of his generation's heresy. In Sodom, however, no one was able to escape the lure of materialism. Even Lot was saved only because of the merit of Abraham. Even at the climactic moment, as the city is about to be destroyed, Lot couldn't pull himself away until the angels literally dragged him out. At that moment, Vayismahamah, he froze, and as Rashi says, Kidei lahatzil es mamono. The angels instructed him, Al tabeda harecha, as Rashi explains, Atahir sharta imahem. You were wicked along with them. Uvizchus Avraham atanitzal. You're only being saved because Avram zechus. Eimcha kedai liros bepuranusa vatanitzal. You are not worthy to watch them die while you are saved. Lot and his wife were steeped in the materialism of Sodom just like their neighbors, and on their own merit they would have been wiped out along with their neighbors. One of the interesting things about poverty is that once the basic needs of a person are met, food, clothing, and shelter, much of poverty is relative. The houses that most of the people in our community live in, even the very small ones, are palaces compared to what our great-grandparents or most of them lived in. But when everyone around you is building a colossal mansion, your small house starts to feel like a decrepit hovel. If they are going away to an eat-a-thon at some hotel for Pesach, then your abundance of food feels like the fare of a pauper. And that pushes you or me to either strive to have more, to live beyond our means, or to feel bitter about our lot in life. Some of you may have read the much-discussed blog post, I Can Do Jewish on Just $40,000 a Year. There is much to be discussed and critiqued, but one thing that shocked me more than anything else was the author's prior assumption that going away for Pesach to a hotel is just an expectation. Wow. And hova asa liyadan neima beimilsa, especially for the future rabbanim. I was once approached by an owner of one of these fancy Pesach programs about coming to his program, and he informed me that all important rabbanim have such positions. I politely demurred, but I wonder if all the important rabbanim that adorn the advertising of these programs and the arms race that it entails have considered the impact of their choices. That is, giving a hechsher to this kind of conspicuous consumption. What the impact is on the behavior and the morale of the community, both on the haves and the have-nots. The mabul resulted in the destruction of most of humankind, but terra firma was spared to regrow. The Dar HaPalaga was only dispersed and the tower mostly destroyed. But Sodom and company are the example, literally, of scorched earth and Moshe Rabbeinu's model for the ultimate wrath of God. No one living surrounded by a culture of material excess and obsession emerges untouched, and not in a good way. Third, materialism tends to eliminate meaning and the meaningful in life. Shlomo HaMelech tells us in Koheles, Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. The intense focus on the pursuit of material wealth, ohev kesef, fuels a desire that is insatiable. When one has acquired X, he sees that someone else has X plus one. It never ends. If you have the iPhone 7, and it does everything you need it to do, but then comes the iPhone X, you must have it, no matter how much the cost. It's always the next, latest, and greatest item that you have to have. And even if you don't need it, you still have to have it, minimally, so you won't be the loser who only has the iPhone 7. We can apply here the notion that Chazal attribute to certain appetites, marivo soveya masbio roev. If you starve it, you will be sated. If you feed it, you only get hungrier. More damaging, perhaps, and I think many of you will appreciate this, is the choices of careers that it forces so many people into. And here it is worth citing from the blog that I referred to earlier one fundamentally correct and significant point that the author makes. The idea that every family with four children is expected to spend $80,000 a year post-tax on tuition is indeed insane and, more importantly, unsustainable. I believe, however, that the author's explanation for the situation is not correct. It is not waste, then, is the cause of the problem. I don't doubt that there are probably some costs that schools could cut, including administration. This is a universal problem. But if you look at what most private schools cost, and you look at what public school districts spend per capita, and you consider that most yeshiva day schools have to offer at least 1.5 times the education, the costs are not way out of proportion. And whatever you could save by cutting waste in administration, you would need to spend on teacher salaries so that they would approach something half respectable. I don't know if the author has ever sat in yeshiva day school board meetings. I did for a number of years, and as best as I can tell, there isn't that much waste, and the teachers are not generally paid that well. I don't wish to dwell at great length on the problem right now, but it is often said that we don't have a tuition crisis, but a values crisis. That's true, but not in the way that many people who say it intend. What we really have is a funding model crisis, which can't be solved because of deeply disturbing values so many people in our community possess with respect to their own material wealth. No community, unless by definition it only allows super high earners to live in it, can afford to mandate private school education for the entire community with a pay-as-you-go user model. And we need to have yeshivas if we are going to be an ongoing religious concern. There is no shortage of total money in our community to fund our schools. Just look at Pesach and Sukkot and other vacations, the cars that people drive, the houses they build, not including those who have more than one house. The only question is one of individual choices and communal will to connect the money and the schools. That is the values problem, and it is rooted in spiritually defective attitudes towards one's material wealth. But I digress. As I said moments ago, most of you face the choice of pondering your economic future and your choices. If you haven't bothered to think about it, perhaps ignorance is bliss. But most of you are not oblivious to those pressures. The number of professions that can deliver the income that you need, A, to pay yeshiva tuition, which should be a priority, and B, to live the modern Orthodox lifestyle, which is upper middle class, and which should not be a priority in any way, the number of those professions are limited. Many of those professions are at best intrinsically meaningless in the larger scope of life, other than the fact that providing for one's family is a proper and noble endeavor, as they fundamentally add little to humanity or society. Worse, others are of predatory nature and downright parasitic. It seems for so many choices of profession, the social utility and the remuneration are in an inverse relationship. And all of this is putting aside the social pressure that some of you rightfully fear, that if you are not a big earner, you are somehow a failure or at least lesser. It is reasonable to expect people to work very hard to be able to pay to do Jewish and to live economically. But it is unreasonable and undesirable to build a community in which so many people have to do what feels to them, mortgaging their souls in order to pay the real and proverbial mortgage. The lifestyle choices of a community and the inability to fund in a proper manner our yeshivot, which are the lifeblood of a Torah community, of Torah continuity, lead to a community that is overstressed and rather narrow and uninteresting from a human and a spiritual perspective. Number four, materialism distorts values and priorities and clouds the vision of individuals and communities. Here again, I refer to the blog I mentioned earlier. There was one particular piece that perturbed me greatly. The notion that one can cut shul dues and not join a shul because one can find the Chabad to daven it for nothing. Chabad does a lot of good for a lot of people, but the model of free, while perhaps necessary to attract the unaffiliated, is foreign to a Torah observant Jew and the antithesis of Torah values. The community has institutions which are crucial to its existence, and the classic halachic model of funding them is taxation, not voluntary contributions. If everyone in the community decided to avail themselves of this model, the community, and probably the Chabad shuls of this kind, would be unable to exist. This is also like the behavior of the people of Sodom. The Gemara in Chelech tells us that if a person had a pile of bricks, each member of Sodom would come and take just one brick, and the pile would disappear. When the owner would confront the thief would just say, "What did I do? I just only took one." Solutions, which if everybody availed themselves of, would cause the collapse of a community, are not solutions. They are selfish acts of narcissism which undermine a community. It is worth adding that voluntary contributions for the running of a house of worship is a Christian practice, not a Jewish one. Material success has often led to another troubling practice and way of looking at the world. In any number of communal organizations in recent years, people who have spent years working in those fields, who in the past would have been promoted to run those organizations, that is what we call the professional leadership, have been supplanted by lay leadership, translate, wealthy board members who have demonstrated success in business, assuming that they know better how to run things than the people who have the training or the experience in doing those things. It might work out well in some cases, but it seems to me on the whole that there is a remarkable degree of hubris in assuming that if you are an expert in one field, you are an expert in a different field in which you have no or limited experience. Here we have a different statement of Shlomo Melech that comes into play, V'hakesef yaneh hakol. Perhaps this is not really about materialism per se, but about its evil twin. Money is power. Either way, this is a twisted vision of how to run a community and its institutions. You know who also suffered from this distortion of vision and loss of values? Lot. In last week's parsha, the Torah uses a seemingly odd syntactic construction in describing the capture of Lot and his property by the four kings. Vayichu es Lot v'es rechusho ben achi Avram vayelechu. The placement of the phrase ben achi Avram is somewhat striking. It should have followed immediately Lot, as it describes Lot. However, I think that the answer is quite simple. When Lot separated from Avram, it was over materialism. First, he was unwilling to refrain from seizing the property of the local Canaanites, as God had promised the land to Avram, and Avram had no heirs. His eyes were already full of dollar signs. And then his choice of where to live was driven by the material abundance of Sodom. Despite, as the Torah tells us almost immediately afterwards, v'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chataim la'shem ma'od. Thus, the Torah's syntax in Lot's capture is quite understandable. Lot's separation from Avram, that is, from his true values of being ben achi Avram, was his lust for the material. And hence the word rechush separates Lot from ben achi Avram. Finally, materialism so often leads to dishonesty. As I cited earlier from Koheles, ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. At a certain point, if opportunities to satisfy one's appetite for the material are not available legally, many will be enticed to do it illegally. It is not such a proud week to be a Sy Sims alumnus if you've been reading the newspapers. We are not talking about poor people stealing to feed themselves. We are not talking about people who are trying to have a little more in life. We are talking about unbridled greed of the super wealthy trying to take even more. The Torah does not countenance the philosophy of Gordon Gekko, greed is good. And it need not be said that no matter how much tzedakah one gives, it is utterly reprehensible. And woe to the institutions that turn a blind eye and take money of such people and show them honor. This is what we call Botzea Berech Nietz Hashem. If there is one takeaway, then, from the story of Sodom, it is that materialism causes the core of a community to rot away. As with Sodom, the corrosion isn't always apparent until the last moment, which in the case of Sodom was too late. The Targumim, on a very difficult ending of a pasuk in this week's parsha, Erdana ve'ereh ha-kitzach ha-soha bo'elai osu kala v'im lo eda'a, understand that here God was allowing the possibility of a last-minute tshuva, and he would then spare them with a lesser punishment. But alas, it was not to happen. The blinding of the people who surrounded Lot's house can be read not only as a physical blinding, but as a metaphor for moral blinding as well. They could not see what they had become. Wealth can be a blessing if it creates material sufficiency, if it is a means to a proper end, but not if it's an end in its own right, or as a means to power. But so often it degenerates into what Shlomo HaMelech refers to as Osher Shamur Liv'alav L'Ra'aso. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi comments on that verse, Osher Shamur Liv'alav L'Ra'aso Zeh Anshei Sodom. Rabosai, you don't control everything in these areas, but there are some choices that you can make. The group of you who sit in front of me in this base medrash tonight will take any number of different paths in life. Some of you will choose professions that you do, and by dint of that choice, not be as financially successful. There are things that you cannot control, like the cost of yeshiva tuition. But there are choices that you can make to accept that material sufficiency is what you strive for, not material plenty, regardless of what those around you do or have. Living with less than those around you and being content, as difficult as it may sometimes feel, is the mark of a person with a proper spiritual and moral compass. And then there are those of you who, because of your choice or because of a feeling of compulsion, will choose certain professions and as a result be very successful financially. Your responsibility is to not live in an ostentatious manner, and to use your financial resources that are a gift of the Ribono Shel Olam to solve the tuition funding model. If you don't, you will be not only turning your back on the Ribono Shel Olam who granted you this wealth, but you may discover that you wind up living in a hollowed out community. Please remember the Mishnah in Avos. Rabbi Lazar Ish Bar Tosa Omar, Tein lo mishelo, sha'ato v'shelcha shelo. V'chein b'David hu Omer, ki mimcha hakol, give God what is His, because you and everything you have belong to Him. And this is true if you work and earn the money, it's a kal v'chomer, if you are fortunate enough to inherit wealth. Finally, some of you will be rabbanim and teachers. You are not likely to be so financially successful, but you may also be in a position where your tuition is partially subsidized by a community or by the school you teach in, slightly ameliorating your burden. Your responsibility, whoever you are, as the educators of our community, is to never forget and never allow your children, students, and community to forget the lesson of Sodom. Its material bounty led to its spiritual corruption, which led to its utter annihilation. Your job is to teach and model proper values and never be machnif anyone just because of their wealth. Material bounty, which is genuinely a means to spiritual ends, builds a community. But when it becomes an end in its own right, like in Sodom, it destroys a world.